Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo, but it appears we're not streaming.
Well, that's because you called in late. That's what it did last night.
Well, here we are. Here we are. We're back. We're up. That's good. We're up. So, yes, we are on the air. So we want to thank everybody for joining us, if you have. And we're going to read some news tonight. We're going to do a news hour.
We don't have an interview from last night. It didn't get recorded. So.
Right. We are unable to record that. So we have. So what we have tonight for you is a series of.
Just some alternative news.
Yeah. Summaries.
News that you won't hear on the regular mainstream media.
Yeah. And for some reason, bookmark. Okay. Go back to that then.
So it should be with you in just a few minutes.
Yeah. So, we got breaking news from LegitGov here. Let's see. Try to figure out some kind of news here for you that looks good.
Well, Obama sticks to Bush detainee policy. The Obama administration is sticking for now with a policy that contends U.S. prisoners held in prison in foreign prisons have no U.S. legal rights, Observer says. A move by the Justice Department Friday to appeal a decision granting three prisoners at the Bagram U.S. Air Base in Afghanistan the right to challenge their detention in U.S. court shows that the Obama administration is
hewing
to policy
set by the Bush regime,
the Washington Post reported, sort of sticking to those policies.
And Spain to indict Bush 6 over torture. Scott Horton reports that the Spanish prosecutors will indict high-ranking members of the Bush administration over allegations of detainee abuse and torture. The six are former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, former head of the Office of Legal Counsel Jay Bybee.
Never heard of him.
Yeah. And former OLC lawyer John Yoo. And former Defense Department lawyer William J. Haynes II, and Daniel Addington, a former advisor to George Bush, Dick Cheney, and former Undersecretary of Defense Doug Feit. Now, why these guys are being done, but not Cheney and Bush and all the other dickheads, is beyond me.
I don't know.
Just interesting that those guys...
Lawsuit proceeds against Cheney security team.
Yeah.
A federal judge in Denver has declined to toss out a lawsuit against four U.S. Secret Service agents who arrested a man in Beaver Creek in 2006 after he approached then-Vice President Dick Cheney to criticize the Iraq War. U.S. District Judge Christine Arguello issued her ruling from the bench this morning and said a jury is going to have to decide the case.
And the racist escapes terror charge after threat to behead and bomb Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
The Crown Office has been accused of double standards by Scotland's biggest Islamic group for not bringing terrorism charges against the man who threatened to blow up a mosque and behead Muslims. The Scottish Islamic Foundation has written to Lord Advocate Elish Eggiolini, querying the decision to prosecute Neil McGregor for a breach of the peace, not terrorism offenses. And McGregor has admitted threatening to blow up Scotland's biggest mosque and to behead one Muslim a week until every mosque was shut down. Pretty bizarre, huh?
Yeah.
The guy got off like that.
And the UN spent U.S. funds on shoddy projects. Two United Nations agencies spent millions in U.S. money on substandard Afghanistan construction projects, including a central bank without electricity and a bridge at risk of life-threatening collapse, according to an investigation by U.S. federal agents.
UN ran a quick impact.
Infrastructure program from 2003 to 2006 under a $25 million grant from the U.S. Agency for International Development. The UN delivered shoddy work, diverted money to other countries, and then stonewalled U.S. efforts to figure out what happened. According to a report by U.S. AIDS Inspector General obtained by U.S. Today under the Freedom of Information Act.
And Iraq War, Gordon Brown aims to delay inquiry report until after election. Gordon Brown will announce by the autumn a long inquiry into the Iraq War, indicating the potentially embarrassing report will be delayed until well after the general election expected next year. Ministers have decided that the query should be wide-ranging, possibly dating back to Margaret Thatcher's tacit support for CIA asset Saddam Hussein during the Iraq War in the 1980s. They're going to really go back.
U.S. sergeant convicted of killing Iraqis. U.S. Sergeant Johnny Hatley has been found guilty of murder of four detainees in Iraq in 2007, but acquitted of the death of a fifth. Hatley was also found guilty of conspiracy to commit premeditated murder, but cleared on one count of obstruction of justice. He is the most senior of the three non-commissioned officers tried for killing four prisoners whom prosecutors and co-defendants have said were bound, blindfolded, and shot in the head.
Army officials, brain injuries, overdiagnosed. Okay, Pentagon and Department of Veterans Affairs are wasting time and money on the illusionary demands of mild traumatic brain injury. Two Army mental health researchers contend in an article that has already raised intense objections from other scientists studying the condition. And I'm going to continue with this article if you wait.
Well, it's from the Army.
Yeah. Instead, it says Colonel Charles Cohogan, the military would
screening questions meant to uncover cases of mild TBI among troops returning from combat. Most troops who suffered a concussion in battle have recovered, they say. Any symptoms they bring home are due to depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, or substance abuse. Hoag and Castro say troops are not getting the help they need because of the overemphasis on mild TBI. The article published today in the New England Journal of Medicine says the Pentagon and the Veterans Administration are relying on flawed science to identify what the Pentagon estimates may be up to 360,000 cases of brain injury suffered by veterans of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The arguments by Hoag and Castro, who have previously done early and influential research on post-traumatic stress disorder, have persuaded the Army Surgeon General, General Eric Schoonmaker, that there are problems with TBI screening, says Schoonmaker's spokesman Cynthia Vaughn.
Okay. Want to go further? Or?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay.
If you're interested, you can go to the article.
The website here is USA Today. Okay, Army officials, brain injuries overdiagnosed. Yeah, we're going to go back here. Okay, well, everybody knows Clinton called for a crackdown on Somali pirate bases. The convoy carrying 500 wheelchairs coming to Gaza for the newly disabled after major Israeli attacks. European campaign to break the siege on Gaza is launching a new aid convoy, one of many. This project is for the benefit of residents of the Gaza Strip who are newly traumatized by physical disabilities. The direct cause is the recent major Israeli attack that left some 1,400 Palestinians dead and approximately 5,500 injured. So the convoy is carrying wheelchairs. We'll see if that comes in. They allow those. And, let's see.
Nigeria to prosecute officials in a Kellogg Brown and Root bribery case. Nigeria's justice minister said on Thursday it will prosecute any Nigerian officials found to have taken bribes from the former Halliburton unit Kellogg Brown and Root in a decade-long scheme to secure $6 billion in contracts. Kellogg Brown & Root, the former engineering subsidiary of Halliburton, pleaded guilty in February to charges that paid $180 million in bribes to Nigerian officials.
And that was under Dick Cheney, by the way. So, let's see.
His G20 protest videos, growing catalog of evidence against police. Videos passed to The Guardian appeared to show police using excessive force against G20 protesters. In the fortnight since the G20 protests in London, The Guardian has received video footage from a number of people that appears to show police using excessive force or questionable tactics in dealing with demonstrators and the press. The best-known video shows Ian Tomlinson, who was attempting to return home in the evening of the first day's protests on April 1st, being pushed to the ground by a police officer. Let's see what... it just said, here's a list of the footage received. I guess you can go and... you can see this. You can actually watch the film, the video.
See if there's anything here.
And we're watching it right now. Watch it for yourself.
Yeah,
I mean, there's no
artwork.
Point in watching it while they can't see it, Leo.
Yeah.
Because all they can hear is the audience
focus.
Can hear is the
yeah.
noise.
Here's the one that was most controversial, I think. Website. There's a lot of video on this.
And you can look for yourself. There's several more videos that you could check out. We checked out the first couple. I didn't see anything unusual in those. It's a lot of noise.
Oh, this is the guy that died. This is Tomlinson. This was the guy that...
This is the crowd at the G20 protest on April the 1st around 7:20 p.m. They are on a corner near the Bank of England. This footage will form the basis for a police investigation into the death of this man. Ian Tomlinson was walking through this area, attempting to get home from work. Further along the road. In a statement after his death, police initially said protesters impeded medics from treating Tomlinson. This is the final image of him alive. We've slowed down the footage to show how it poses serious questions about police conduct. Ian Tomlinson had his back to riot officers and dog handlers and was walking away from them.
Yeah,
he had his hands in his pockets. Here the riot officer appears to strike Tomlinson's leg area with a baton. He then lunges at Tomlinson from behind.
Yeah, the guy didn't
Tomlinson is propelled forward and hits the floor.
Must have hit his head or something.
Yeah, he felt hard.
around 10 seconds, Tomlinson seems to be talking to the officers. They do not help him. Witnesses described seeing him dazed and stumbling along the road before he collapsed.
Yeah. Brain injury.
Brain injury. Well, I hope that guy is convicted of murder. The guy didn't do anything.
No, the guy...
He was
home. Yeah, and they got the video on this, too, so it's like, come on. Yeah, so hopefully these bastards will get their dues. But, oh, man, it's unbelievable. But anyway...
Well, that's a horrible place to live now, England.
Yeah, it's a... It's the Orwellian 1984 there, I'll tell you. They got more crap going on. Every street corner has a camera, and
mm-hmm.
everybody's under surveillance. It's a frightening place.
Met Chief orders review of potluck order policing after G20 protest. Inquiry will look at the tactics such as kettling. Video evidence of police actions also to be studied. The Metropolitan Police Commissioner, Sir Paul Stevenson, has ordered a review of public order policing and mounting concerns over the way his force and the City of London Police handled the G20 protests this month. It also revealed that he has separately called for video evidence of police actions during the demonstrations in London to be reviewed to identify any conduct by officers that may warrant investigation.
I wonder if they got kettling in there. What that is.
I don't know what it is.
No, I know, but I wonder if they got a video here that shows it.
Or maybe they define what it is.
Yeah. Oh, that was on Ian Tomlinson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The so-called practice of kettling, and that means containing crowds, a tactic the Met has stood by nearly a decade, will be a prime focus of O'Connor's inquiry. Doesn't really say how they do
no.
their containing of crowds.
Right. I want to be reassured that these tactics remains appropriate and proportionate. Separately, I've had to express my concerns. The video footage of some police actions is clearly disturbing and could be thoroughly investigated. Mm-hmm. So I think they're going so thankfully they're going to investigate that poor guy's death. It's ridiculous. Let's see.
Right-wing groups growing in the U.S.
Where's that now?
America could be facing a surge in right-wing extremism, according to the U.S. government report. The Department of Homeland Security study says the election of America's first black president and the economic slump has helped racist groups recruit, but the report says no specific attacks are being planned by extremists. Rove speaks at Denison University.
Right. I'm gonna go to another site.
Why don't you go to David Icke?
Yeah, that's my favorite. And we will. There are a few things on that site that I liked. Saw the whole thing about
mm-hmm.
the lady. I was watching that.
No, I don't want to.
Yeah,
watch
it was
that.
Pretty good. I thought this was an interesting one. Fiji's military shoots civilians without fear of prosecution.
Fiji's military has been given permission to shoot civilians without fear of being prosecuted. Terrified Fijians say they are too frightened to speak out after the latest political upheaval, which has seen the nation's media gagged by sweeping state censorship restrictions and a crackdown on dissenting free speech. Reports emerged yesterday of people being detained without charge in the absence of a judiciary. Public emergency regulation imposed by the military regime have given military personnel permission to use arms to break up processions, meetings, or assemblies. If anyone is injured or killed, the decree grants soldiers immunity from prosecution. Yesterday's Fiji Times had blank pages after police censors forced the paper to erase international reaction to the latest developments. A British man arrested for having an ornamental pig in his garden?
Yeah, it gets crazy over there, I tell you that. Go ahead.
A dad was hauled out of bed and arrested for having an ornamental pig in his garden after his policeman neighbor claimed it was put there to poke fun at him. Shocked, Robin Demzik, 57, was dragged off to cells and held for nearly 7 hours as the constable's colleagues grilled him about the porcelain porker. He was finally freed without charge after explaining the back pig with white spots had been there for 8 years, while the officer had only lived next door for four.
Good. Let's see what else goes on.
Oh.
There's a picture of it here. It's
cute.
A ceramic pig. And he was finally freed without charge after explaining. Yeah, okay.
Fuming window fitter Robin, he used to have piggering in his back garden, slammed the swoop yesterday. He said, I was in bed and I could hear police cars outside. I was thinking, what's going on? Then I was dragged out by the police, arrested and chucked into the back of a police car. I was held for almost 7 hours because of having the stone pig apparently counted as harassment. Neighbor P.C. John Albert called in his colleagues following a simmering 18-month feud over a footpath that splits his back garden from Robin's in Whitney, Oxfordshire. The traffic cop insists the former pig farmer has no right to use it. Robin said the P.C. Albert had me arrested because he didn't like me keeping my 12-inch porcelain model pig in the backyard garden. He seems to think it's offensive to policemen. The dad, who got rid of his hogs years ago and now uses the sty as a shed, told how his neighbor has also failed to see the funny side over a sign he painted saying, no pigs. He denied it was a dig at the cop. Robin explained, when I got rid of all the pigs, I painted a sign saying there weren't any left in there, and that was in case someone was worried about them. Although he was freed without charge, Robin was ordered to remove the ornamental pig from his garden of his 200,000, I guess, pound home. He was also told to stop calling his outbuilding a sty. Robin said, the reason I call it that is because it used to be a piggery. It still got troughs and slurry dips in the floor. Yesterday, Thames Valley Police confirmed officers were still looking into the complaint made against him. A force spokesman said, we can confirm the man was arrested on suspicion of harassment in relation to the incident. He has been released without a charge, but the investigation is still going on. There was an ornament in the garden and also some writing on a wall. P.C. Albert was last night unavailable for comment.
Hey, you guys, this is utter absolute harassment.
Yeah, I mean, if you want, you know. That's,
shoot the bastard. You know, it's terrible, terrible, terrible. I
wouldn't want to live next door to somebody with a porcelain pig in their yard, but, you know, what are you going to
do? Yeah, but, I mean, you know, it was there before. I mean, it was there for 8 years, for crying out loud. You know, and it turned out that the cop, you know, took offense to it. You know, rightfully so, he's a pig. So, genetically modified maize was banned in Germany.
Good.
Germany will ban cultivation and sale of genetically modified maize. German agricultural minister said on Tuesday, and the ban affects U.S. biotech companies Monsanto, MON-810 maize, which may no longer be sown for this summer's harvest. Good. And Agnier told a news conference that this maize is the only the 810 maize is the only genetically modified crop currently approved by the EU for commercial use. I have come to the conclusion that there is a justifiable reason to believe that genetically modified maize on a type of MON-810 presents a danger to the environment. And Monsanto declined immediate comment. And it says, so we can keep going. Now, let's see.
Why do police need to wear masks?
Let's see, let me just go down here.
Mm-hmm. The world as it is today, the glory days of Bush and Cheney, go to Spain. Oh, the way to pleasing everyone and pleasing no one, on the way to fixing everything and fixing nothing, is going to reverse none of Bush's extraordinary assaults on the Constitution. He's going to leave everything just like it was, as he makes everything different while changing nothing at all, and the daily cost is going to be serving dog vomit that's been reclassified as oatmeal, and move on, and all the peace now, end the war, bullshit. Artsies are going to dig in and hum Kumbaya as the terminated drone cruises the shooting galleries of Pakistan.
You want to read more of that?
This is Easter. Obama's going to egg roll with gay parents and heal the nation's disaffection with everything unlike itself until everything is everything. But first he's got to go eat bitter herbs in a skullcap as the angel of death passes over Tel Aviv and lands in Gaza for all-you-can-kill buffet. He's going to assume so many positions that he'll look like Stephen Hawking combing his hair with the Chinese acrobats in a massively magnified spider's eye. He'll be like the Scarlet Pimpernel in reverse. On the way to pleasing everyone and pleasing no one, that's what he just read.
Yeah.
When I said that 9/11 is the litmus test, you'll see it there at the top of the Google charts with a bullet. I didn't realize how very true that is. So keep in mind that everyone and anyone who doesn't stand forth to declare that 9/11 was an inside job is part of the job. You want to go deeper, you only have to look at those who question 9/11 but make no mention of Israel. They are the ones who are working the 9/11 money circuit but don't want to offend the money. These are the people who will criticize Fox News until they can appear on Fox News. Do I sound a little ticked off and acrimonious on this lovely Easter morning? Gee, I wonder why that is. What's up with that visible? This is worship. I don't know. This is worship with that.
Yeah, if the first president still required analysis, Bush joked, then what could the 43rd president have to worry about? This is
what ticked visible off this morning.
Yeah. So anyway, this is just a silly blog, but interesting.
But it's true. Everything and nothing.
Yeah. Well, today was tax day, and there's a tax revolt everywhere in the United States.
Not real ones, though.
Little baby teabags, you know, little teabag revolt.
Yeah.
You know, no shooting or killing or
not paying your taxes.
Yeah, they all pay their taxes. So the city, states, and municipalities have a huge budget problem. That problem is caused by too much spending. And the sensible thing to do would be to reduce expenditure. Instead, cities turn to fees to fill the budget gaps. And there's fees for everything. I think we read that.
Yeah.
This is right. Piracy in the Red Sea. Saudi points towards Israel.
Normally do columnists and analysts openly accuse Israel of sponsoring acts of piracy that multiply off Somali waters, but they also do not hide their fears of an internationalization of security in the Red Sea, where Israel plays a decisive role. What is happening in the Horn of Africa is not a simple case of piracy. These acts of piracy raise various questions about the capabilities and equipment of simple outlaws who are seeking ransoms, wrote Tuesday Nawaf al-Sabham in the Saudi Daily. These acts triggered statements on the internationalization of the Red Sea, in which the enemy state of Israel would be a crucial element, he adds. Read more. Let's see what that says.
Yeah.
So there's always more to something.
Wherever there's big money, there's government
going on.
Big business.
So who's got an interest in the internationalization of the Red Sea, asked the analyst, echoing another disturbing development represented by this decision of a shipping company to divert
Maersk, the world's largest container, that's the one that was...
Yeah, to divert its huge merchant fleet from the Suez Canal and take the route via the Cape of Good Hope. Who has got an interest in putting pressure on Egypt by diverting cargo ships of Suez Canal and by making Egypt lose daily income of over $15 million, the analyst asked again. Who is behind the acts of privacy was the headline of the Daily Al Rada editorialist, Dr. Hashim Abadu Hashim. These repeated acts of piracy are premeditated. They are sponsored by a state or organization, in any case by a party seeking to create tension, concern, and instability in the Red Sea in order to achieve strategic interests. According to him, this party seeks to convince the international community to monitor the sea on the pretext of ensuring the safety of navigation, ensuring energy supplies, and preventing supplies of arms to troublemakers in the region, referring particularly to the Islamist militia, who control much of
Shabab,
who control much of Somalia.
This is interesting, huh? It gets deeper and deeper now, you know?
More explicitly, Jalal Arif wrote Monday in Al Yom, the Arab countries bordering the Red Sea are now faced with four dangers. The internationalization of security in the Red Sea with the pretext of fighting piracy, Israel's covetousness of seeking to play a key role in the Red Sea, the theft of Arab oil through piracy, without counting the blow to navigation in the Suez Canal. The Daily Al, I can't even read that, asked in its editorial Monday how hackers may have the means of air defense missiles guided by satellites, computers, and advanced navigation equipment.
Yeah.
Good question. This means that some countries close an eye to these acts of piracy for strategic, political, and economic reasons, added the newspaper, pointing out that the Red Sea is the only waterway in the world where residents are Arab-dominant, and it must remain so.
Yeah, it's interesting how these pirates know where these ships are.
Yeah,
you
if
know,
they can't see them.
And the fact that they're 300 miles out or so of the
off their coast,
and they ride out 300 miles on these little boats.
I don't think so.
I mean, there's more to this that we're not finding.
Well, we know we read recently that nuclear waste have been dumped off their shore. We know that that part of the region's being overfished.
And we know that the foreign European countries are
responsible for the dumping
of the nuclear
and the fishing.
Waste, right, and the fishing. So,
but there are other reasons too.
Yeah, and it seems like Israel is wants to
monitor that area.
And somebody's giving these pirates this information. So it's a much bigger deal. You know, and there's a lot of money at stake too. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, so far $30 million, but I mean these things are and 200 hostages already today. I mean today there's 200 hostages
mm-hmm.
out there. So this is an ongoing operation that's not.
There's more to it than meets
the
eye.
Yeah, I mean, this is more involved than a couple of pirate fishermen. You know what I mean? You think of, and let's see, international security in the Red Sea, with the pretext of fighting piracy, Israel's covetousness of seeking to play a key role in the Red Sea, the theft of Arab oil through piracy. Without counting the blow to navigation in the Suez Canal. The Red Sea is the lung of Arabia.
Mm.
That's how they call it. And this means that some countries close an eye to these acts of piracy. Did you want to read this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Yemen mobilizes Arabs. I don't know if this has anything to do with the pirates.
No, they just... basically say Israel in Islamist line of fire. Israel is also condemned by Islamists on the internet sites, which are full of inflammatory articles, including one written by the former Secretary General of Kuwaiti
Salafist
movement, Sheikh Hamad al-Ali. The aim of the Zionist enemy in the Red Sea have never ceased, wrote the Islamic cleric on his website.
Illustrating his long article with a quote of a former commander of the Israeli Navy regarding a diabolical plan which aims to transform the Red Sea into a Jewish lake.
Well.
And Zionist military engagement in Ethiopia, so and so. But, you know,
there's a lot going on there.
That we're not aware of. And, let's see. Well, Israel calls for the assassination of Nasrallah, who was the chief of Lebanon's Hezbollah movement. Nasrallah deserves death, and I hope that those who know what to do with him will act and give him what he deserves.
Nice.
AFP quoted the Israeli minister as saying on Silent Sunday.
Netanyahu.
Yeah.
Warmonger.
Nice guy.
This concerns me, the vaccinations. Maybe babies could be routinely vaccinated against hepatitis B under controversial plans being discussed by government experts. Cases of the disease, a blood infection, which is often transmitted sexually, are said to be spiraling in Britain. An influential committee on vaccination is considering adding it to its combination jab given to babies at 8 weeks. This would create a 6-in-1 vaccine, which would also immunize against diphtheria, tetanus, whooping cough, polio, HIV disease, a form of pneumonia. But campaigners are concerned about the over-vaccination of children and fear any complications caused by adding hepatitis B to the jab would be difficult to spot. By the age of 4, a child will have received 30 vaccines, some in multi-shot jabs, including an MMR against measles, mumps, and rubella. Read more. Let's go into that.
Virus commonly spread by unprotected sex and needle.
Sharing.
Which is hepatitis B. And is 100 times more infectious than HIV, and the disease can lead to liver cirrhosis and liver cancer. Because it can be spread by only a tiny amount of blood through cuts and grazes, it is thought children in playgroups could be particularly vulnerable to catching it. But GP Dr.
Richard
Alverson, director of the baby jabs, single baby jabs, meaning the jabs is a shot in inoculation. The single vaccine clinic said he was opposed to the vaccination move. He said the children at most risk are born to mothers carrying the virus, and they are already given immunization at birth. He said a 2004 study found adults immunized against hepatitis B were 3 times more likely to develop multiple sclerosis in the 3 years after the vaccination.
Wow.
So stay away from that one, boys and girls. The Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunization, which for this month has greater powers to decide UK vaccine policy, is due to discuss the plans at its next meeting in June. Want to read the rest of that, or you want to...
No, I think
that's enough.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's about what's going on there with vaccinations. Stay away from H hepatitis B vaccinations. Tony Blair describes, has always tried to present himself as a visionary leader when he talks about his twin passions, politics and religion. But judging from his entry in the VIP visitors guest book at the British Embassy in Washington during a recent trip to the U.S., his role as a Middle East envoy,
peace envoy,
may have led to a midlife identity crisis. His signature is there, but where guests are invited to state their home, Mr. Blair wrote Jerusalem. Yeah.
Not in England anymore, huh?
What we got here? Former Prime Minister did not own anything that could be described as a home in the Middle East. He is said to spend an average of 1 week a month at the American Colony Hotel in Jerusalem, despite local officials insisting that his visits are less frequent. Indeed, the Mail on Sunday
can disclose that he faces growing criticism from senior figures at the United Nations for not spending enough time on his role as head of the quartet, the foursome of the U.S., Russia, and EU, and the UN tasked with building peace in the Middle East. They say they are unhappy about the time Mr. Blair devotes to the lucrative international lecture circuit and to lobbying to become the first permanent president of the EU. The position will be created if Ireland votes yes to the Lisbon Treaty this autumn. Mr. Blair's signature was left in the embassy guest book on January 14th when he was collecting the Presidential Medal of Freedom from George Bush. The bizarre entry will also increase speculation about Mr. Blair's domestic arrangements. Asked during an interview in January how often he manages to see Sherry and his 8-year-old son Leo, he replied, not nearly as much as I should. The Blais have two homes in the UK, a £3.6 million townhouse in London's Connaught Square, and a Buckinghamshire mansion bought last year for £4 million. A spokesman for Tony Blair would not say why he had written Jerusalem. He said Mr. Blair's role in the Middle East continues to take up the largest proportion of his time. On the EU presidency, there is no campaign and no campaign team. The job doesn't even exist yet. Mr. Blair is focused on his role in the Middle East.
So much for Tony.
Yeah, creep.
Yeah, the next permanent president of the EU. Let's see what else we got. Still got a few more minutes. Science unlocks secrets of our deepest love. Want to read that?
Secrets of unconditional love.
I pulled up the article yesterday. It's in the back there, but. It was an interesting article. Here we go.
The secrets of unconditional love, one of the most mysterious emotions, are being uncovered by scientists tracing the unique brain activity it creates. They have found that the emotion experienced as a desire to care for another person without any thought of remorse emerges from a complex interplay between seven separate areas of the brain. Such brain activity has only limited overlap with the cerebral impulses seen in romantic or sexual love, suggesting it should be seen as an entirely separate emotion. Professor Mario Beauregard of Montreal University's Center for Research in Neurophysiology and Cognition, who led the study, said, "Unconditional love extends to others without exception is considered to be one of the highest expressions of spirituality. However, nothing has been known regarding its neural underpinnings until now. Scientists are interested in unconditional love as evolutionary theory suggests we should feel such emotions only for people who help us pass our genes to future generations, such as spouses and children. Our fascination with the many forms of love is reflected by Hollywood, with films such as War of the Worlds, where Tom Cruise's character risks his life to save his estranged daughter. The unconditional love he displays contrasts with the obsessive sexual emotion in films such as Basic Instinct, or the romantic love portrayed by Nicole Kidman and Hugh Jackman in the epic Australia. In the real world, however, unconditional love is often experienced towards people with whom there is no connection. The question is why? To carry out the study, Beauregard recruited subjects with proven ability to feel strong unconditional love, low-paid assistants looking after people with learning difficulties. Beauregard asked them to evoke the feelings of unconditional love and hold them in their minds while they had a magnetic resonance imaging scan, an MRI. Of the seven brain areas that became active, three were similar to those of romantic love. The others were different, suggesting a separate kind of love. Beauregard's discoveries show that some of the areas activated when experiencing unconditional love were also involved in releasing dopamine. The chemical is deeply involved in sensing pleasure, with rising levels strongly linked to feelings of reward, even euphoria. In a research paper in an academic journal, he said, "The rewarding nature of unconditional love facilitates the creation of strong emotional links. Such robust bonds may critically contribute to the survival of the human species."
What do you think of that?
Not surprised.
I thought that was interesting. But anyway, we are unconditionally like the bank stuff, but you know, if there's a baby under house arrest.
In an arbitrary act that is probably the first of its kind in human history, the Israeli occupation forces placed a 1-year-old baby, Fahad Shukir, under house arrest for 2 years simply for being born in Damascus. The baby was born to Paris from Mijal Shams, who were studying in Damascus University. Upon their return to their hometown with their firstborn son, they were informed by the occupation forces of the decision to place the baby under house arrest. The baby's uncle, Dr. Ihsan Shukir, stated that the family anticipated all possibilities and the harassments that they will suffer from the hands of the occupation forces, but this act exceeded all expectations, noting that the baby can't visit a doctor or accompany his mother to visit his grandfather. The Israeli occupation forces' excuse is that the baby is a terrorist because he was born in Damascus.
My God.
Isn't that ridiculous? Damn
Israelis are insane. Okay, the baby was born, let's see.
He pointed out that the baby's families contacted the International Red Cross and human rights organizations to shed light on this tragedy and pressure the Israeli forces, who may attempt to arrest Fahad if he is taken out of the house by his father. The occupation forces are rejecting any attempt to resolve the situation and telling the baby's father to leave the town and head to any country and register baby there so he will be able to live in Majdal Shams.
Whatever that makes, but they won't let him take the baby out of the house.
That's ridiculous.
Because the baby, the 2-year-old baby, is a terrorist.
1-year-old.
1-year-old. What a freaking! That's amazing. Totally amazing. Amazing people.
Oh, look, it's on chemtrails there.
Yeah, it's just a poster. Liberals on women's shows for communism and Satanism. I don't know.
British police bust Obama's half brother for child sex assault.
I read that. That was an allegation. It was kind of a weird thing, but that's why I didn't pull it up, because I just kind of like, yeah, too much, you know. Let's see. We got any few more? We only got about 10 minutes left. This one is interesting. U.S. shipped 989 munitions containers to Israel a week before Gaza invasion.
Mm-hmm.
In the dying days of the Bush administration, and a week before Israel launched an aerial bombing campaign followed by a land invasion of the Gaza Strip, the U.S. military shipped 989 containers of munitions to Israel. Each container was 20 feet long, with a long estimated net weight of 14,000 tons. Shipment reported he reached Israel last month. A huge arsenal of munitions will replenish those expended by the Gaza war, according to the Amnesty International in the UK. The shipment included white phosphorus.
Okay.
Are we good guys? Huh?
Aren't we nice?
Microchipping your medication. Microchips and pills could soon allow doctors to find out whether a patient has taken their medication. The digestible sensors, just 1 millimeter wide, could mean GPs and surgeons could monitor patients outside the hospital or surgery. Developers say the technology could be particularly useful for psychiatric or elderly patients who rely on a complicated regime of drugs and are at risk if they miss a dose or take it at the wrong time. It could also be used for the chronically ill, such as people with heart disease, to establish whether costly drugs are working or whether they are causing potentially dangerous side effects. I don't know if I like that idea or not, but
I don't really know.
The sensors could, let's see. The sensors could even remind women to take the pill if they forget. Intelligent medicine works by activating a harmless electric charge when drugs are digested by the stomach. This charge is picked up by a sensing patch on the patient's stomach or back, which records the time and date that the pill is digested. It also registers heart rate, motion, and breathing patterns. The information is transmitted to a patient's mobile phone and then to the internet using wireless technology to give a complete picture of their health and the impact of their drugs. Doctors and carriers can view this information on secure web pages or have the information sent to their mobile phones. The silicone microchips are invisible to patients and can be added to any standard drug during the manufacturing process. Two major drug companies are investigating the technology developed by U.S.-based Proteus and Biomedical, and Peters, a cardiologist, Burial, London, who is coordinating trials, said the technology was transformative. This is all about empowering patients and their families because it measures wellness, and people can actually be track getting better. Psychologically speaking, that's hugely helpful. That's
for
hugely helpful for patients and enormous reassuring for carriers. And normally patients...
Carers,
rather. Normally patients would have to be in a hospital to get this level of feedback. The hope is that it frees up beds and saves the National Health System money. But I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Me too. I don't know if I want my pills being bugged. You know, I mean, that would be kind of weird. Anyway, and you know what? What do you think? We want our money back. Larry Summer protesters. You want to hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. These are people protesting Larry Summers, who is the financial advisor.
Do you foresee the possible need for another stimulus bill at some point, or do you think we have enough stimulus right now?
You know, it's hard enough to
Larry Summers talking.
focus on the policy choices that we have now without focusing on
Larry Summers is part of the problem. He's a toxic mess. What about the $35,000 from government bailed out company for one day? Your former company paid you for that?
Samples, 0.4 parts per billion is allowed. bottled water suppliers who add fluoride typically follow the same standards. Community, I even think they add fluoride in some of these waters.
I don't drink them.
Yeah. And community water fluoridation uses industrial waste fluoride. Community water fluoridation uses industrial waste fluoride. However, pharmaceutical-grade fluoride may also be contaminated. According to the CDC, given the volumes of chemicals used in water fluoridation, a pharmaceutical grade of sodium fluoride for fluoridation could potentially contain much higher levels of arsenic, radion, nucleides, and regulated heavy metals than the standards.
Doesn't that make you feel safe and
good?
Yeah,
look what they're doing to us. I mean, it's amazing. We're living beyond 10 years old in this country. Community water fluoridation is industrial waste fluoride. Yeah. The FDA regulates bottled water, but it's almost impossible to know how much fluoride is in the bottle unless you call the manufacturer, because domestic bottled water with no added fluoride may contain between 1.4 and 2.5 milligrams of fluoride, even though it says it has no fluoride. And imported bottled water with no added fluoride may not contain fluoride in excess of 1.4 milligrams. And domestic water added fluoride contains between 0.8 and 1.7. So fluoridation is... Bottlers are not required to list any naturally occurring fluoride on the labels. Fluoridation is irrational because whether it's coming from the tap or the bottle, says attorney Peter Bieber, president of New York State Coalition Opposed to Fluoridation. It's time to leave fluoride chemicals and all their contaminations out of every water source. I agree with him.
Mm-hmm.
And the Nazis used fluoridation for
to control the people.
Mind control, you know, the Germans, you know, and they're
they all came over here and suggested we control our people, and that's why we have a fascist state.
Yeah. So we want to thank you tonight. Sorry we didn't have an interview for you, but we will be
back next week with an interview,
and I will be back tomorrow. We'll be please join us tomorrow when we go into the land of the spirits. Friday night with George Dixon. So thank you for joining us, and have a pleasant evening.
Good night, folks.